Can you guys hear me? I've got the lapel mic on. Okay. All right. Well, good evening, everybody. This is good to see everybody. I specifically asked Jessica not to put my name in the announcements for class so that we'd have at least three people. So, and in order to entice you to stay, I do have cash. So see me after class. Well, I hope everybody had a good holiday. We were out this past weekend for Thanksgiving, so we didn't have the privilege of seeing a whole lot of people to see that they had a good Thanksgiving. So I'm hoping everybody did. I know I did. I'm healthier and heavier because of that. I know what my New Year's resolution is going to be, same as it's been the last 20 years. So, but again, glad to see everybody here tonight. I don't know if this happens all the time, but I know when I was asked to teach Wednesday night class, I had a couple of days to think about my subject matter, and then got busy putting it all together. And somewhere between then and this evening, I read some passages in Scripture that was that aha moment, that where the light came on, and I thought, you know, this will be even a better subject to teach. And I haven't heard or been a part of a class that taught this subject, at least in the manner in which I hope to present it to you for this quarter. And so I changed gears. So that's one of the reasons tonight I don't have PowerPoint. I was just trying to shift gears and get everything prepared. And so I would have something for you tonight. But what we're going to talk about this quarter are, throughout the Bible, there are significant numeric patterns that we read about. And those patterns are specific numbers that show up repeatedly throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. And there's one particular number that caught my attention, and that's what we're going to focus on this quarter. Now, I'm wanting to share a caveat with you that will hopefully lead us not to any misunderstandings or interpretations or any ambiguities, understood or implied. I am no way recognizing or condoning numerology. Okay? In the Bible, numbers are numbers. In the particular number that we're going to talk about is 40. And in the Bible, 40 means 40. Nothing more, nothing less. It's 40 days. It's 40 years. Maybe 120 divided into 43 times. But it's still 40. So I am presenting this number 40 based on what I've read, based on observation through the Scripture. And because there is a pattern throughout the Old Testament, New Testament, and it is represented throughout the Bible, I think I found anywhere from 150 some times to 160 some times, there truly is a pattern. And maybe because it's in the Bible that many times, God is saying, hey, there's a lesson here. So, to make it clear, what we're talking about are the events and the representation that 40 is expressed in the Bible. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm not taking away from or adding to. I'm not going to try to interpret outside that which was being shared with us in the Bible. So to make it plain and clear as I can, I'm not condoning or recognizing anything associated with numerology or thereof. So With that being said, I hope I've made myself clear, and we can continue our discussion in regards to the number 40 in our study. As we open up our Bible in the first book of Genesis, 40 pops up pretty quick. We go through creation. We go through the genealogy up through Noah. And then we come to the end of chapter 5 into the beginning of chapter 6. And chapter 6 is a prelude into the number 40, which is represented in chapter 7. And so, as we get into chapter 7, can anybody tell me what event took place in chapter 7 that we all have been taught from the time we were in Bible class? The flood. That's right. That's right. 40 days and 40 nights. And even today, as back then, a day was a day and a night was a night. So we're not going to try to read into anything there other than which is described for us in the Bible. How many of you will agree with me that this is probably one of the most predominant event in biblical history? I think so. And this will not be a rhetorical question, but can any of you give us a reason why? Why we might think that? Yes, the most. Okay. There was a full 120 years there. That's right. The preparation and everything. Yeah. Of Noah's family and his root. So we can see that 40 is significant. And we see that in the beginning of this particular event, we have to kind of go back into chapter 6 to give us a prelude of what caused the event in chapter 7. Any comments on what was the root cause of this particular flood and the reason for it? Sin. Okay. Is any sin worse than another sin? Maybe. Maybe not. I think sin is sin. There's the one sin that we can commit where we totally denounce God and we turn away from Him, the unforgivable sin. But the difference we see in the sin here, as described maybe in some of the sin that we experience in our lives today, is that if we take it from God's perspective of the sin in chapter 6, the sin of man's heart was what? Evil. To the root. I mean, to where the debauchery was such that it was every day. It was every hour. It was every minute, every second. It was so bad that the evil in mankind, that there was absolutely no fear of God. There was absolutely no fear of His punishment. And how do we know that? Because during the 120 years that they were preparing for the flood, Noah was doing what besides building an ark? He was preaching. He was telling the people, you wicked people, pay attention. It may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but I tell you, when this boat's done, y'all better be holding on. And what do we see in chapter 6? Throughout this time in history, how many people realized what Noah was saying was true? Did they care? No. They did. They made fun of him. They probably, in today's terms, ridiculed him. Can you only imagine what the ridicule would have been like if there had been Twitter back then? If there had been Facebook back then? If there had been any number of social medias which expose you to the world? It would have been brutal. It would have been absolutely brutal. But yet we see, especially after we read through the genealogy of chapter 5, that Noah was a godly man. Of all the generations, when it came down to Noah, it was such that who walked with Noah? Wasn't there a holy presence with Noah when it came to God? What's that?
God found favor in Noah.
He did. He did. And so we see that favor, it led to the salvation of Noah and his immediate family. Now, when we look at the debauchery, I want to read something here. And this was from the Matthew Henry commentary. And he definitely says it a lot better than I ever could. He said, because man was flesh, not only frail and feeble, but carnal and deprived, having misused the noble powers of his soul to gratify his corrupt inclinations. God sees all the wickedness that is among the children of man. It cannot be hid from him now, and if it be not repented of, it shall be made known by him shortly. The wickedness of a people is great indeed, when noted sinners are men renowned among them. Very much sin was committed in all places by all sorts of people. Anyone might see that the wickedness of man was great. Here's the distinction of the sin that we might know today compared to the sin back then. God saw that every imagination or purpose of the thoughts of man's heart was continually evil. Continually evil. I sin. I have a moment of recognition. I have a moment of remorse. And then I have a longer moment when it comes to asking for forgiveness. But down in my heart, there's a genuine hope after that forgiveness that God will have mercy on me. Sooner or later, especially when my salvation is called of me, I want to be as confident as I can that I've done everything to receive favor and we'll have a home in heaven. These people, that thought process never entered their mind, let alone having a place in their heart. And God saw that. How do you think that made God feel? He grieved. How many of us could look at our children today and conceive that mindset? I mean, I've had moments where I'd want to strangle them, you know. But I knew Cindy was behind me with the skillet, and she would have got me before I got, so it would have hurt. But I mean, God was to the point to where he looked at his own children, his own creation, and to the quick, he was hurt. And I think as a parent, to be disappointed in your child can be a pain. That is different than the pain we experience when we stub our toe or when we smash a finger. It's a pain that's deep. It penetrates. Because somewhere down there, at least as humans, I'm not going to put God in this category, but I know as a dad, I would think, Where did I go wrong? What could I have done? Now, I definitely do not want to put God in that category because God is by far the Almighty. But yet he was grieved. And so we see that this wickedness of man was so great to the point that God saw that in their heart, that every imagination and purpose in the thoughts of man's heart was only evil. This was the bitter root, the corrupt spring. The heart was deceitful and desperately wicked. The principles were corrupt. The habits and the dispositions were evil. Their designs and their devices were wicked. Were there any good hearts to these people?
We lament that we have a world that's becoming more and more ungodly, and I think that's a fair lament. But there's a ton of people who are atheists, have no business with God, who are honest, who are kind, who are fair.
Yeah.
And if I'm gathering, reading this correctly, there wasn't anybody.
No. Well, and if I read scripture correctly, that was kind of the root cause, wasn't it?
Well, who knows what imaginations they brought in.
Yeah. But it was so evil that there was no room, no capacity in their heart to tolerate any kind of good. That they were scheming and plotting and planning all the time. And that as I read it, that it brings to me the thought that there is no capacity in my ability to imagine any kind of evil that may have not already existed in this time. I know as a good person I don't have that capacity, but as an evil person, I think these individuals took it to the extreme by all means. And so we see where it leads us in chapter 7. Right. 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 You couldn't get away from it. I mean, it was your neighbor. It was your friend, your families. I mean, it was an environment that was that way all the time, 24/7. We have evil today. I think it's not out there for everybody to see it. You'd have to seek it, but and you may have to help me with this, Devin. They call it the black web or the dark web. Okay. And I guess if you got a way of getting in there, you can pretty much find whatever you want. What they call them, snuff films, I think, where, you know, people are killing other people and they videotape it to bestiality, to just about anything you would imagine. And that's the thing. I don't have the capabilities of imagining stuff like that. But we see that in chapter 6, there were no limits. And so I think, you know, that it's here today. It's just not everywhere. I mean, back then, they probably didn't have the luxury of having a sanctuary like this. Well, there's, and I have by design stayed away from certain scriptures because I didn't want a rabbit hole and go off in a different direction. So, between the giants and the angels, we're not going to go there, just for the sake of keeping me on the right track and not going there. We'll hold that for another class. So with the understanding of what we have seen in chapter 6, now we're going to go and we're going to fold it into chapter 7. We pretty much figure out why the events in chapter 7 are recorded and took place. So I don't think there's any misunderstanding. So before we go, any other comments you guys want to make on chapter 6? In some of the wickedness that was going on and recognized. Okay, let's pick up in okay, before we go into 7, I think it'll help make that transition a little smoother. In chapter 6, verse 11, it says, "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth." And in verse 13, it says, "And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth shall be filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. make yourself an ark, and it goes on to describe what he needs to do in order to make preparations for the flood. Chapter 7, the great flood. Then the Lord said to Noah, "Come into the ark, and you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. You shall take with you 7 each of every clean animal, a male and his female, 2 each of animals that are unclean, a male and his female, and also 7 each of birds and of the air, and the male and the female, to keep the species alive on the face of all the earth. For after 7 more days, I will cause it to rain on the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and I will destroy from the face of the earth all living things that I have made." And Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood waters were on the earth. What are 2 main attributes of Noah? Righteous. What else? Obedience, faith, righteousness. Are those the same attributes that we're to have today? Sure. What's that? Well, when you consider 120 years, and just so you don't ask Cindy, but we're still working on our kitchen at the house. You know, there comes a point where you look and you do and you go, just.
So, to Jim's point, this ark is how big?
Okay. Okay. 300 cubits, so. 1.
That goes back to my other question on their technology. At no point did Noah say, no boat that big ever could be built.
Yeah.
At no point did he say, this is impossible.
Well, and where's the engineering on keel displacement and stuff like that? You know.
I mean,
yeah.
And many decks, what's a deck?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was on Twitter. I think the answer is yes, but I think what we're getting at is the construction, the manner of construction, which, you know, this was on such a vast scale, you know, and. Yeah, I think so. I think in simplistic, yeah, that would be the case. But, you know, they didn't have lasers back then. And, you know, my granddad, we built the pole barn and stuff, and we were up with the trusses, and he had a string down on the ground, and he was holding it like this, and he'd point this way or this way to get that thing level. You know, we didn't have to put a level on it. And he had a couple other tricks when it came to squaring up a corner and stuff. So if you were handy and you had some skills, you could do it. But, yeah, there, without any particular science applied, to build a boat that big and to be confident that when the waters rise, that thing wasn't just going to...
Scarf joints, dovetails.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
I mean,
You got your beam, you know, and your support and your ribs. I mean, it just, but that's where we don't have to spend a whole lot of time, because we know with God's divine instructions, it was going to be done correctly. I think just knowing that you're working on a project for 120 years in itself would be a little daunting. All right, we'll come back, but I'm going to get through all of chapter 7, then we'll come back and hit it on the highlights. So Noah with his son, his wife, and his son's wives went into the ark because of the waters of the flood, and of the clean animals and of animals that are unclean, of birds and of everything that creeps on the earth. Two by two they went into the ark to Noah, male and female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were on the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's, and this is, kind of pay attention because it's pretty specific here, so I'm sure there's a reason. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day, all of the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of the heaven were opened, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Hence our first introduction to the number 40. On the same day, Noah and Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wives, and the three wives of his sons with them, entered the ark, they and every beast after its kind, all the cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort. And they went into the ark to Noah, two by two, of all flesh, in which is the breath of life. So those that entered, male and female, and of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him. And who closed the door? God. Keep that in the back of your mind, because I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask you why. And it wasn't because it was a big, heavy door. Okay? So, kind of ponder on that. Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved above on the surface of the water. So I'm pretty confident from what I'm saying that the engineering worked. I think God knows what he's doing. The boat rised, it floated, it displaced the water appropriately. It didn't roll over. It didn't one end come up like this, like it was going to torpedo and submarine dive. Everything was balanced. Everything was proportional. Everything worked as it was supposed to and designed. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heavens were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. And all the flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life. All that was on the dry land died. Pretty significant. Now picture in your mind, you're in the ark. And I believe in God's wisdom, because of the gopher wood, the density of it, the thickness of the beams and stuff, that once God closed that door, that they were kind of wrapped in this cocoon. They were insulated from the outside world. And I think, again, we'll find out why God was the one that closed the door and why God, in his wisdom, may have insulated them during this time. So kind of keep that thought process as well. So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping things and birds of the air. They were destroyed from the earth, Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive, and the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. Okay. Any comments before we go back and start hitting some of the highlights? What do you visualize in your mind when you're being read or you're reading the events in this story? That's my prime, yeah. And he didn't have that high 500 liquid capsule bottle of Advil either. He was still just a young guy, right? He still had a little giddy up in his step. Yeah, one, two, yeah. Well, I visualize very differently from when I was a kid to what I know now. I visualize a lot of chaos, a lot of calamity. Do you think it puts a different perspective on the gnashing of teeth? I think when we think about it truly, the events that took place, do you think they weighed heavy on Noah? Yeah. Noah was a man that found favor in God. What kind of characteristics do you have to find favor in God? What's that? Godly characteristics. Can we name a few? Okay, pure in heart.
Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, goodness.
Yeah, I mean, go down the list. Compassionate. To the point that even Noah, I think at the time, he'd be willing to forgive if he thought that they might be saved. All right, let's go back to verse 7, or chapter 7. Then the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. One of the commentators said that God speaking to Noah, come into the ark, is about equivalent as a mom or a dad stepping out on the porch at twilight and calling the kids home. An event that we could also experience when we were growing up. Summertime. Sun's going down. The street lights are coming on. Man, we're still having fun. We're playing hide and go seek or tag or catch or just anything to keep us from going in. If it was my grandmother or my aunt, I knew that whistle 3 miles away. If it was my grandmother, I knew her voice out of everybody else's. And my dad, if he didn't think his voice was loud enough, he'd go out and he'd honk the horn. And buddy, he didn't want him to do it twice. But those were calls that were backed by compassion and love, tenderness. God looked down at Noah and said, it's time. All that labor, all that 120 years has come down to this moment. And as we see the conclusion of one event, we see the beginning of another. And God says, time to come in. He says, you'll take with you seven of each of the clean and two of the unclean. In God's infinite wisdom, he is prepared to take care of Noah and his family throughout the duration of this event, because they're going to be enclosed in this boat for how many days? What was it, 150, 154? Don't hold me to that. But from the time that door was closed to the time they opened it up, they were in the boat. So they did as any righteous, obedient, and faithful man did. He did that which God had asked him. He and his family entered the boat. The animals, likewise, following God's command, gathered and entered into the boat. There was no commotion. There was no wrangling. There was no crowding and corralling and stuff like this. The doors open, and in they came, orderly, as God requested. Right. Well, and that's why I wanted to bring attention who closed the door on the ark. Because I think God, knowing Noah's heart, knew that he had the godly characteristics. He was forgiving. He was compassionate. And just as a human being, he was subjected and subjective to the feelings and the emotions which would be reactive to those people clamoring to get on the boat, to those people who were shouting and screaming, maybe even holding up their babies. If anything, take my child. Maybe to the point to where they were throwing them. You know, who knows what people do when at those particular moments. But God, being the loving God that he was, and knowing Noah's heart, I think that's why God took the burden off of his shoulders, of Noah's shoulders, and put it on him. And he was the one that closed the door, so that Noah didn't have that blood on his hands. And because of the way the ark was designed, now this is just speculation on my part, it's not in the scriptures, but I think when you look at the density of the gopher wood, the way they sealed it up with pitch, the particular design, that once that door was closed, they were insulated as a moth is in a cocoon. And they were insulated such that they wouldn't experience variations in temperatures. But foremost, they would not be able to hear the calamity that was going outside as the waters started to rise. I can't even imagine. That wasn't just somebody experienced a tsunami because of an earthquake that happened out in the middle of the Pacific. This was the end of mankind, with Noah and his family being the only survivors. I don't think you could cover your ears enough to keep those sounds out of your head. So in God's ultimate wisdom, he took that burden from Noah and he closed the door himself. I think that in itself shows us the compassion of God. And if we look at it symbolically, and today, who is our salvation proportional to Noah's salvation in the ark? Think about that. Think about the water separation back then from the earth, the sinful nature of earth, and the washing of a new beginning, the same washing that we receive when we become baptized and become children of God. Okay, thank you for your attention. There'll be another 40 to talk about next Wednesday. And count your blessings. Thank you all very much.